On this third day of October 2006, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And we are still in chapter 2, and we are on text.
My book's in my car.
Chapter 2, text 24, probably on page 97, maybe not, 224. Achejo yam madayo yam.
Achejo yam madayo yam.
Akledyo shosha evacha.
Akledyo shosha evacha.
Nityak sabakatak sthanu.
Nityak sabakatak sthanu.
Achalo yam sanatana.
Achalo yam sanatana.
Achejo yam madayo yam.
Achejo yam madayo yam.
Akledyo shosha evacha. Nityak sabakatak sthanu.
Nityak sabakatak sthanu.
Achalo yang sanatana.
Achalo yang sanatana.
Lord Krishna says, this individual soul is unbreakable and insoluble and can be neither burned nor dried. He is everlasting, present everywhere, unchangeable, immovable, and eternally the same. Purport. All these qualifications of the atomic soul definitely prove that the individual soul is eternally the atomic particle of the spirit whole, and he remains the same atom eternally without change. The theory of monism is very difficult to apply in this case, because the individual soul is never expected to become one homogeneously. After liberation from material contamination, the atomic soul may prefer to remain as a spiritual spark in the effulgent rays of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the intelligent souls enter into these spiritual planets to associate with the Personality of Godhead. The word sarvagata, all-pervading, is significant because there is no doubt that living entities are all over God's creation. They live on the land, in the water, in the air, within the earth, and even within the fire. The belief that they are sterilized in fire is not acceptable, because it is clearly stated here that the soul cannot be burned by fire. Therefore, there is no doubt that there are living entities also in the sun planet with suitable bodies to live there. If the sun globe is uninhabited, then the word sarvagata, living everywhere, becomes meaningless. Om jnana tamarandasya jnananjana shalakaya chukshut unmidatam mena tasmai shri gurave namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Sri Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him. So this statement in the last paragraph that the living entities are in fire, that may be a little doubted on our parts, but I remember some time ago, it may be 15 years by now, reading how they had discovered little organisms in these volcanic vents under the water, deep in the ocean. And these are very hot. You know, the water boils at a much higher temperature way under that high pressure. So it's up to 500-600 degrees Fahrenheit under there. And yet, they never expected to find little bacteria, whatever it was they found. But sure enough, they had somehow adapted or, you know, these in this hellish condition. And they were living beings there. You can look it up. They're living right, and they couldn't explain how they could possibly adapt to that. They had never found anything to be able to live with that kind of heat. So this is at least a partial confirmation of this. Of course, the sun is a lot hotter than 600 degrees. But the point here that Krishna is making, and he really reiterates what he said in the previous text, which is that the soul cannot be cut by any weapon, it cannot be burned by fire, nor moistened or drowned by water, nor dried up by the air, or by the wind. So he repeats that in the first line, and then he adds some new information, or repeats a little bit, nitya sarvagatak sthano. So the sarvagata, all-pervading, doesn't mean that individually we pervade everything. It's already been stated that the living entity pervades his own body with consciousness. And we can attest to that. That's self-evident. That every inch of our body where the circulation of blood we have some consciousness, some feeling. But I can't tell what you're feeling, and you can't tell what I'm feeling. But so that means that we're individuals. And it has been explained early on here in text number 12 that we're individuals eternally. If you go to text 12, you'll find Krishna saying, Natve vahun jatu nasam natvam neme janari pana chaiva nabhavishava save vayamatakparam. Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, soldiers on the battlefield, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. So that the fact that we existed there means that we exist individually. We always existed as individual particles of spirit, and we shall eternally exist as such. The reason why it's so important to understand this, because there's a certain class of transcendentalists known as Mayavadis, whose philosophy is that we are only temporarily individual, that in our perfection, we merge into the supreme Brahman, and we become one, and we lose our individuality. The whole point of Bhakti Yoga is to reawaken our eternal loving relationship with the Supreme Soul, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Without the three elements of the individual bhakta or devotee, the Lord or the receiver of bhakti, the Bhagavan, Supreme Lord, and the bhakti itself, there's no meaning to bhakti yoga. So since Krishna makes it very clear in this Bhagavad Gita that is our natural position, that is our true position of perfection, is this reinstatement in our service position, we must be eternally individual. He makes that point again in the 15th chapter, Mamai Vangsho Jiva Loka Jiva Bhuta Sanatana, that the living entities in the material world are my fragments, unksha. Unksha means these infinitesimal fragments, and we are so eternally, sanatana. So that's this nitya, and then sarvagata. Every place we look, there are living entities. It is said in the sixth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam that the number of atoms in this world and the living entities are equal in number. That means that there's a living entity in every atom. Just as the super soul is there, we know in every atom, the living entity is there. In a very rudimentary form, virtually unconscious, you know, or suspended animation, if you will. But those living entities, they come up and they enter into rudimentary organisms and gradually come up to the human form. So there's practically speaking infinite number of living entities. We can't count them. But the living beings in human form are very special because we have this ability, because of our higher intelligence, to think about these ultimate questions. I was just in Tucson, Arizona. We have a nice center there. It's the first time I've been there. Very nice. It's a place that has mountains. You saw, Alan, you visited. I was with Gangaya. And I gave a series of talks on the second chapter, first canon, those verses we learned when we were learning verses. And he talks about the supreme dharma for the living being. And that is that savai pungsang poto dharma yoto bhaktir hokshade, that dharma, that activity which awakens this original bhakti, or love for God, which has to be uninterrupted and unmotivated, will completely satisfy the self. So the mission of the human life, the living entity in human life, because there's living entities everywhere, right? But we're fortunate, and this is again and again mentioned in the Shastra, that don't waste this human life. Try to understand these absolute questions. It is said right in that series of verses, Kamasin Indriya Priti Labo Jivete Yavata, that we shouldn't use our life or misuse our life more properly in the pursuits of the senses, the sense pleasures. This will simply keep the veil of ignorance tightly drawn on our brain, on our consciousness. Rather, one should live to inquire into the truth of the soul, tattva jigyasa, the atma tattva, if you will. And what is that atma tattva? What is that ultimate substance that we're looking for? That's described as Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan in the next verse. This white light that we mentioned here that we're not supposed to merge into, we shouldn't try. The super soul within the heart, or God in the heart, which supplies our intelligence and so many things. And Bhagavan, the full manifestation of the Absolute Truth. So that should be our mission. It's not just that we know that the living entities are everywhere, but we should see how rare the human form of life is, and we should use it appropriately. Then another one is sthanur. This is the next quality. There's one, two, three, four, five qualities mentioned in this one line of the text 24. So sthanur means unchangeable. Unchangeable. Our nature as living beings, as souls, cannot be changed. The only thing that changes is the material body. The example is often given of the moon on a full moon on a cloudy night. And when you see the clouds blowing in front of the moon, and it looks like the moon is moving. If you stand so you look, the illusion is that the moon is moving. But it actually is not moving. It's the clouds that are moving. So similarly, it looks like we're changing, doesn't it? We change from day to day, year to year, life to life. But actually, we as spirit are not changing. We are eternally pure consciousness. It is simply our externals, the gross and subtle externals. We have this subtle mind, which is certainly constantly in flux, flickering here and there. And as we grow in our life, we have certain ideas come in, certain sensations, and others are pushed down into this memory hole, so to speak. They're in there, but much deeper. We forget about them. But it's constantly in flux, this mind, and what to speak of the body is changing. But the knower, the one who knows the mind and the one who knows the senses and the body, doesn't change. And that's truly us, that soul, that Atma. And as explained in several verses here, Ajo Nityak Shashvatoyam Parano Nahanyate Handamane Shirire, that was text 20. Unborn, eternal, ever-existing, primeval. That's us. That's us. So it's kind of a wonderful revelation. You just begin the Bhagavad Gita, if you believe it. Ah, there's no death. Death itself is an illusion. Death is simply death of the body. Now, it's a very serious transition, but we're not going to meet annihilation. We will continue to exist eternally. The question is, how are we going to exist? In what form are we going to exist? What is our destiny? That is in our hands, and that's the great mission of practicing yoga, is to take control of your destiny by acting in such a way that your consciousness becomes purified and we understand our real nature as part and parcel of the Supreme and the servants of the Supreme. So sthanur, achalo, basically the same thing. Immovable. This is another mystery. I think I spoke about this the other time in another class. We say we're immovable, right? The Christian says the living entity is immovable. What does it actually mean? I mean, you just told me how it took such a long time to get here. You had to move from wherever you live or work to here. Right, and we're moving constantly. I'm going to be moving to India in a few days, and then moving back, hopefully. In other words, you got to move. But what's actually moving? It's the physical body that's moving, isn't it? The soul is just as there's no past, present, or future for the soul. The soul is in the immediate present. In the spiritual world, there's no past or future. Everything is pure spirit, right? So because there's no change. How do we measure time? We have to have some kind of change, whether it's a tick-tock of something, a spring mechanism in the clock, or it's a little vibrating lithium diode or whatever they got in there, right? Or the sun, you have the sun dials, right? There's got to be a measure, a regular measure, of a change, of movement. So since the living entity doesn't change, we just read that, we're eternally the same, pure conscious spirit. We don't really go anywhere. We are now, right now, we are in the spiritual world. But we have forgotten that. We've forgotten that we're in the spiritual world, and we've created a dream of the material world, it seems completely real to us. But it's just like a dream. It's passing, going through, and creating so many impressions that we think are important and think are real. But at the time of death, all of those are completely unreal and unimportant. What's important is, you know, where we're going. So the soul doesn't move anywhere, the soul doesn't change. But because we're identified with the moving and changing physical body and all of these other physical things, we're positive that we're moving from here to there. This is a very inconceivable subject matter, but it's a fact. And sanatana, this is reiterating this eternal nature of the soul. So knowing this now, of course, the reason why Krishna reiterates the fact that it can't be cut, burned, dried, or drowned is because he's speaking on a battlefield and he wants Arjuna to fight. What he's saying is, look, yes, you will fight this battle, you will kill the enemy, some of whom, although they're in the role of the enemy, you highly revere and have great affection for, especially Bhishma and Drona, your teacher. Bhishma is the father of the whole dynasty, grandfather. So these are to be revered, and he didn't want to kill them. But he says, look, death is an illusion. No one can kill, no one is being killed. And the higher purpose, which is my purpose, Krishna's purpose, is to reinstitute Dharma. This Dhritarashtra and his sons have established a Dharma in the world. And they need to be eradicated. And they need to be killed. Because it's for the benefit of the whole world that Yudhishthira will then become king and will rule. But as far as killing goes, because it's under the control of Krishna, because it's his desire, there's no karma for, there's no sin for Arjuna. There's no sin for Arjuna. In fact, everyone's going to be benefited, even though they're going to die on this battlefield, because it's in the presence of Krishna, and they'll be exalted. So but it looks like, from the material point, oh, what a bloodbath, it's horrible, I don't want to have any part of it. And that's Arjuna's dilemma. So that's why Krishna keeps reiterating here about the weaponry, because he's on the battlefield. Okay, any questions on these points? I think we covered this purport. All right, let us move on. Text 25. Continue to describe the symptoms of the soul or qualifications of the soul, qualities of the soul. Avyakto yam, achinto yam, abhikaryo yam, uchyate, tasmat evam vidit vainam, nanu shochitam arhasi. It is said that the soul is invisible, inconceivable, and immutable. Knowing this, you should not grieve for the body. Purport. As described previously, the magnitude of the soul is so small for our material calculation that the soul, cannot be seen even by the most powerful microscope. Therefore, he is invisible. As far as the soul's existence is concerned, no one can establish his existence experimentally beyond the proof of Shruti, or Vedic wisdom. We have to accept this truth because there is no other source of understanding the existence of the soul, although it is a fact by perception. There are many things we have to accept solely on grounds of superior authority. No one can deny the existence of his father based upon the authority of his mother. There is no source of understanding the identity of the father except by the authority of the mother. Similarly, there is no source of understanding the soul except by studying the Vedas. In other words, the soul is inconceivable by human experimental knowledge. The soul is consciousness and conscious. This is a very interesting idea. Is consciousness and conscious. That is also the statement of the Vedas, and we have to accept that. Unlike the bodily changes, there is no change in the soul. As eternally unchangeable, the soul remains atomic in comparison to the infinite supreme soul. The supreme soul is infinite, and the atomic soul is infinitesimal. Therefore, the infinitesimal soul, being unchangeable, can never become equal to the infinite soul, or the supreme personality of Godhead. This concept is repeated in the Vedas in different ways, just to confirm the stability of the conception of the soul. Repetition of something is necessary in order that we understand the matter thoroughly without error. So here we go with more qualities. Avyakto, invisible, that's obvious because it's infinitesimal. Achintya, this is some of the achintya qualities we just described, that the soul is immovable. How is that? Later on, Krishna will reiterate this achintya quality. Ashchayavat pashyati kashtadenam. Some seeing the soul or ashchayavat pashyati kashtadenam. They are amazed. They hear about it, they are amazed. In other words, the soul is inconceivable. Because it cannot be perceived by any scientific instrument that we have. And therefore, many scientists, they deride. They used to have this kind of derisive thing. Oh, the ghost in the machine. You believe there's a ghost in the machine, you know. Because from all their measurements, consciousness is arising from some combination of chemical activity in the brain. We can give a little drug and change your consciousness, right? We can get in there with a scalpel and cut something out, and then you can't hear anymore or whatever, right? Sometimes you have a brain tumor. So it seems like consciousness is arising from some physical thing like the brain or chemical thing. But factually, consciousness is what it is, and it is expressed or understood by the conscious being through the medium of the brain or the medium of the nervous system and the senses. But consciousness in and of itself is unchangeable. Avikarya is certified here. So then he encourages Arjuna, knowing this very well, you should not lament. Why was Arjuna lamenting? Because he was identifying with the body and that his friends would be killed. So then Prabhupada talks about the way of knowing, and this we have to constantly come back to this. We can understand a little bit about the soul just by logic, right? Just by understanding. Yes, what pervades the body is definitely consciousness. That's right, intuitive. We can know that if we cut our fingernails, there's no pain because there's no circulation in there. The consciousness is carried around through the blood cells, the red blood cells or whatever. So wherever the nerves are being nourished by the bloodstream, therefore we can have some sensation. So that's confirmed. But just like, what was the example? Prabhupada gives the example of the father and the mother. Could now say yes, but we can go test the DNA now. We don't need the word of the mother, so maybe this is a little passé. But suppose you have you see some Chinese people come in the door here, or you see them on the street, and you read about the China, and they speak a language, and it's said to be Chinese. You hear about that, and you open a book, you go to the library, and there's a book on China. And there's pictures and everything. So you're going to think, yeah, there's a China, and there's a lot of people there. And I just read it. But you haven't visited it. It's all actually inferential. You don't know if there's a China or not by your own direct perception. But you believe in it because there's so much evidence that it's so, right? And authoritative people tell you, yeah, I was in China. Then you heard about Marco Polo came back. That was a big thing. Came back to Italy, and he'd been to China and gave him all this news, right? So the point is that when you find some authoritative person who's then confirmed by other authoritative persons, and it jibes with some things that you can experience directly, such as you can see the Chinese people speaking the Chinese language, then you conclude, yes, there's a China. I have full faith there's a China. So the same thing here with the soul, or more importantly with God, is that we have books that describe the spiritual world and describe God. We have persons who have, through yoga, been able to directly perceive God and describe Him. Just like we have this wonderful Brahma Samhita, right? Brahma Samhita. So Lord Brahma is this original, person in the universe, meditated, performed austerities. At first, he couldn't perceive the Lord when he first appeared on his lotus flower seat, He didn't want to know where he came from when I asked that all-important question. Couldn't answer it on his own. So he got the clue from Krishna, performed austerities, and he meditated, and then he had a revelation. And Krishna appeared in his heart, and he described it in the Brahma Samhita. Chindamani pakadasanma sukapa vriksha rakshavati susudabhira bipaliyantam lakshmi sahasashatasam brahma sevyamanam Govinda Mari Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord. So now, this is a very specific, description. Govinda, Lord of the cows and so forth. What's going on? He's herding cows in abodes built of spiritual gems, surrounded by purpose trees and being worshipped by Lakshmis or gopis. This is all very specific language. It's not vague or anything. So we can discount this whole thing, but why should we? In other words, there's so many things that are mysterious to us that have been revealed just in the scientific world. The whole idea of quantum mechanics is completely inconceivable, that two things can go on at the same time, or that just your knowing about one can affect the path, or affect, about quantum mechanics? Anyway, it's just it's very mysterious. The subatomic world. With all those little particles in there and everything. What do we know from that? We don't, And it's like a whole different way of thinking. 100 years ago, 300 years ago, they would have never dreamed of that. If someone would drop in from the 21st century and start describing computers and iPods and TV, they would think, they would think you're nuts. They would think you're making up a myth, but it's real, right? So, by the same token, these descriptions of Krishna, these words of Krishna describing the soul, which we cannot know on our own efforts, we should accept on the authority of great sages and saints who have been have already traveled the path and purified themselves and had revelation through more acute senses, transcendental senses. That's the only way to know these things. One has to have faith enough to practice in order to begin to experience. So the soul is, you can know somewhat. You can begin to infer the existence of the soul by consciousness everywhere. You can have some indication by near-death experiences, by hypnotic regression, people remembering things from, you know, from previous lives that turn out to be true. There's no other way it could be, but there's a soul that came into the other body. There's all kinds of stories like that. Get on the web and Google, you know, transmigration, and you'll have so many videos. So, but still, that's you know, an indication. That's like seeing the Chinese walking on the street. You still don't know there's a China on your own. So, but if we want to know in full, then we need faith to have faith in these scriptures. So this is all very important stuff for us, because as soon as we understand that we're eternal, not bound by this body, then our whole perspective should change. Well, what should I do in that spiritual identity? If I'm only working on the identity of this body, working on, you know, this gender, that age, you know, but that's all temporary. You know, that's just a coat. That's just a temporary covering on the soul. What about my eternal life? What about my life as soul proper? How can I act in that way? And that's what bhakti yoga is all about. When we act in relation to Krishna through by loving service, that's our eternal identity. That's beginning to wake up from, you know, we're all like amnesiacs. You know, due to the trauma of so many births and deaths, we've forgotten who we are. And we're identifying with this temporary little body. But to wake up, we need to be reminded. It's like if someone has amnesia, you remind them, you take them around to their old house. You know, see, here's your dog. You know, here's your driver's license. See your name? Oh, yeah. You know, you start to remind them gradually who they really are. And then hopefully one day they wake up and resume their original activities and identity. Similarly, we are amnesiacs, and we're being reminded here by not only the words, but also activities. You know, this is what we should do to revive our original identity. So this is the first lesson. We're in the ABCs now of you're not the body, you're an eternal soul. Therefore, we have to find out the functions and duties of the soul. Okay, any questions on these points? Mara Mangala Prabhu.
I just had a realization now that when somebody gets amnesia, what usually brings them around is a song or some word or something, just jars something in their subconscious. And I was thinking, like you were just saying now, that we've all been sleeping, we've been sleeping for millions of lifetimes, but now that we've come into contact with devotees, we've heard from Srila Prabhupada's teaching and some other, that sort of, oh, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, when you get two people that are very much in love, and they have their, like, their first or their 50th anniversary, and they go out to dinner, and then somebody will bring a violin and they'll start playing. They say, oh, dear, look, he's playing our song again. You know? And that evokes memories of their beginnings, of their.
Yeah.
By listening to the Maha Mantra, that.
Yeah, the Maha Mantra is that. Yeah.
Memories of our beginning with Krishna, really.
So. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, in many places, Prabhupada talks about this, and it's part of the philosophy that the knowledge is already there. You know, nitya siddha Krishna prema sadhika manoi shravanade shuddha chitte kare hidoi, that the eternal perfection of love for Krishna, with all that entails, which is awareness of the form of God, the name of God, the qualities of the Lord, and our own specific relationship and form, all of that is known to us. And so, nitya siddha Krishna prema sadhika manoi, it's not something that is external, it has to be acquired from outside. Shravanadi shuddha chitte kodaya hudoi, that by the process of purification of the chitta, the consciousness, beginning with hearing chanting, etc., hearing the Hare Krishna mantra and so forth, it naturally awakens. This love awakens, and with it, the knowledge of who we are. That means it's already in there. Okay, and it makes, that makes perfect sense. You know, intuitively, we can think, well, okay, we have all of these relationships, all of these things. Where did the idea come from? You know, I mean, even the Bible says we're created in the image of God. You know, where did the idea that we have two hands rather than four hands or maybe three hands? Just the, you know, the idea of loving relationships, father and mother, all of these different things. Where did that come from? In other words, if there's an archetype for it all, and this is the reflection or this is the shadow, then it has to be the original relationship, the original form, the original everything. So that's known to us, but it's deeply buried, buried, buried under millions of lifetimes of illusion. And so we need a powerful pile driver, kind of chisel, to break through the illusion in this age of Kali. And so that's the chanting of the holy name, basically, is the thing that reminds us, the song that reminds us. Anyone else? Okay, we will save the next one. Madhu, one other story?
We haven't had this for a long time. Can we have one of your poems?
Oh, a little poem.
Yes.
Okay, let's have a little poem. A poem.
It's been a bit.
Okay, let's see. Huh?
The latest
poem?
The latest.
Well, there aren't that many latest poems. There is one here that I did in the last couple of weeks. Bujanga Rupachandraka Spurada Kanda Chudankure Nirankashadra Ganchala Brahmana Bodha Bringam Brahme. I can remember the English better than the Sanskrit. Patanga Duhitastati Vanakutira Kali Priye Parispudutume Mahostvaya Mukunashundharati. A verse by Rupa Goswami, one of our great acharyas or spiritual masters. He says, you wear the best of crests, a crown of perfect peacock plumes. You wear the best of crests, a crown of perfect peacock plumes. Your dancing glances stun the bees meandering midst the blooms. You relish love play in the cottage by Kalindi's shore. O Krishna, may pure love for you be mine forevermore. But some of the other ones that I wrote have no Sanskrit to them. You have to visualize Radha and Krishna swinging beautifully, and behind them is the Yamuna flowing, and it's the last part of the day, so the light is very, you know, nice and soothing. Flowers all around. Where blooming flowers spread their sweet perfumes, where clear Yamuna flows and songbirds sing. Where soothing lovely light the land illumes, Sri Radha and Sri Krishna gently swing. This idol of their love in Braj's bowers forever charms their dearest devotees, whose hearts Sri Krishna's sweetness overpowers, obscuring his prodigious potencies. Whatever in this world we know as love is just a shadow of the love they feel. The wise aspire to learn the secrets of devotion's path and taste that love ideal. So there it is. All glories to the Prabhupada. Hari Hari Bol.